Okay, good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. I'm your moderator this morning. Today is Sunday, June 23rd, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, June 21st, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,507, that's 21,507. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,508, that's 21,508. This morning, A Vision for You presents Surrender, My Journey from Agnosticism to Faith. Powerless. In step one, we find complete despair, frustration, and bewilderment. The mental obsession condemns us to pick up that first bite when we don't want to. And the phenomenon of craving condemns us to continue eating once we start. We cannot solve this problem of compulsive overeating by ourselves. Our efforts, our energy, and our desire have not delivered the hoped-for results. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. The Big Book says we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. But where? And how were we to find this power? Finally cornered by our disease, we stand at the jumping off place. We begin that search, an undertaking that will lead us through the remainder of the 12 steps. The premise of the 12 steps is that a spiritual awakening is necessary in order to recover from our disease. Our concepts of a higher power and God as you understand him afford everyone an unlimited choice of spiritual belief and action. The process of enlightenment is usually gradual or even slow. But in the end, our seeking always brings a finding. The willingness to grow is the essence of all spiritual development and can bring us from agnosticism to faith. With us to share about her journey from agnosticism to faith is Amy G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Amy is a loyal servant of Overeaters Anonymous and A Vision for You, and she's always eager to carry this message of recovery. And it's with great delight and appreciation to welcome Amy G. to the line this morning. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I can be heard okay? I was muted, but I'm unmuted, correct?
That is correct.
Perfect. Great. Thank you. And good morning, everyone. My name is Amy G. I'm a recovered compulsive eater from Maryland, and it's so awesome. What an honor and a privilege to be here and to share on a special edition, and welcome to everyone, new, old, returning, and all. Just a quick qualification so that you know that I belong here. I came to Overeaters Anonymous in March of 1983. I spent almost 5 years bouncing in and out of this program and became recovered in December of 87. And by the grace of God, have been abstinent since that time. And what I mean by abstinence, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while doing so, as they say, happily, maintaining a healthy body weight. And I'm so grateful to be here. This program has literally saved my life and transformed my life in a way I could have never even imagined. So the reason why I came up with this title is because, I mean, I don't know about you all, those who got it right away to those who didn't get it right away. And sometimes You know, I hear people on the line and they have such a great connection with God. And I think to myself, oh, they must have just been struck godly, or they had this spiritual background, or, and I didn't have any of that. I came into this program completely entrenched in my agnosticism. And so this is just my story, my path. My surrenders may not be your surrenders. And I'm not here to convince you about God or to teach you about the chapter We Agnostics. This is my path. This is my journey through this program. And I just thought it might help to share it because, you know, when I first came into the program as a newcomer and I heard everyone talking about God, it was like, or the quote, our recovery is contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I didn't even know what that was. It was like you were talking another language to me. It was like you were on the moon, right? You were that miles and miles away from me. And if you'd given me a rocket ship to get there, I would have said no way because of my agnosticism. I mean, I was so entrenched in my agnosticism that I went into my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting in March of 83, dying of this disease, binging and purging. And I'm also recovered anorexic, bulimic, drug addict, alcoholic. If you're catching my drift here, if there was any way to anesthetize myself or escape my feelings, trust me, I was all in, right? The disease of more. And I walked into this meeting and there were people talking about doing things with food that I thought no one else did, like putting food in the trash and then going back, you know, a few hours later to go get it. And then they mentioned the word God, you know, the three-letter word that I considered a four-letter word at that time. And I got up in the middle of the meeting and I left. I thought, this is a cult. There is no way my Zeus-like character that I grew up with a lightning bolt in his hand, ready to zap me whenever I did anything wrong. There was no way. If you had said to me then, God was the only way to get recovered, I would have continued to walk out of that meeting. And thank God for this fellowship. I call it God with skin on. I love the sayings and the slogans in this program. You'll hear me say a few today. Someone followed me out of the room, and they didn't try to convince me about God. They just said tradition three to me. They said, look, you are welcome here. The only requirement is a desire to stop being crazy with food. Please come back. And that was a lifesaver to me. And I look back, that to me is divine intervention, you know, back then, that someone followed me out. Never forget or never doubt the power a few words may have to a fellow compulsive overeater suffering in this disease. And I kept coming back. But as I said, you know, that was March of 83, and I didn't get recovered for almost 5 years until December of 87. And I struggled mightily with what they call the D's of this disease. You know, they say denial, delusion, defiance. Well, I couldn't deny there was a problem, right? I'm binging and purging 10 times a day, right? Okay, there's a problem. I get it. And I was even willing to admit, okay, I'm crazy with my eating. But the delusion and the defiance, my gosh, I had it in spades. Delusion, oh, you know what? I don't need God. I don't need this higher power thing. I will control it. My family's motto was, all it takes is a little willpower. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You can do anything you put your mind to. Knowledge and willpower would save the day. And I struggled in and out with that. And then defiance. I flat out was completely defiant about the higher power thing. I absolutely said there is no way I would ever believe in anything. And I struggled and bounced in and out treating this program buffet style. And finally, you know, dying, desperate and doomed, the other three D's of the disease, beaten and pummeled by this disease, I had no other answer. And of myself, I knew I could not fix myself. So then began my first surrender, which was surrender to powerlessness. You know, the first word in the step one is we admitted we are powerless. But I truly believe that there's only one thing that me, myself, and I can do, and that is choose to surrender to true powerlessness. I have to choose that. And I, you know, I had to say that I could not fix myself. So finally, having been around the program, I decided to work it as it was laid out, which was one, to get a sponsor. And God bless the sponsors who tried to help me in those 5 years. You never watered down the program. You said, keep coming back. We'll love you until you can love yourself. Don't walk out 5 minutes before the miracle. But most importantly, you never watered down the program. And finally, I had a sponsor that said to me, Amy, if your way is working so well, why are you here? And I could not argue with that. So I had to have another surrender. And for me, that was surrender to discipline, or you can call it a surrender to action, or a surrender to following instructions, or a surrender to accountability. But for me, it was the word discipline. You know, my sponsor said to me, step two, we're going to walk right through step two. Here we go. We admit we're powerless. Yes, I had surrendered to that. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I said, what do I do? And she said, look, Amy, I don't care if you think it's Jesus, Buddha, or the universal vibes of a tree, as long as it isn't you and it's greater than you. I ain't it, folks. I ain't it. And that I could go that far, right? And then step three was a decision for action. I mean, that's all I needed to do. She said, forget about everything. In Overeaters Anonymous, we act our way into a new way of thinking and believing. We don't think our way there. You don't have to have all this belief. You just need to be willing. And I could go that far. I could do that. Now, I know we study the first 164 pages of the Big Book, but I am also taking a new review of the fourth edition stories. And there's one story and a couple of paragraphs that describe me exactly where I was at that time. It's on page 316, and it says, My Chance to Live. It says, no one who drank as I did wakes up on the edge of an abyss one morning and says, hey, looks pretty scary. I think I'd better stop drinking before I fall in. A little further down, what happened was I found myself at the bottom of the canyon. Yeah, I fell in. Hello? Thinking I'd never see the sun again. AA didn't pull me out of that hole. It did give me the tools to construct a ladder with 12 steps. And to me, this isn't just a tool or a fellowship or a step program. It is all of those, right? It is everything combined together. And I needed to have the tools to begin this program. And those of discipline and action were so, so important. He goes on further to say, if asked what the two most important things in recovery are, I would have to say willingness and action. I was willing to believe that AA was telling me the truth. I wanted to believe it was true in a way I cannot relate in words. I wanted this thing to work, and then I began to take the course of action prescribed. And that's what we did. And I, you know, what were some of those disciplines? Well, of course, the discipline of abstinence. I mean, absolutely, in AA, we put the plug in the jug, and OA, we need to know what jug to put the plug in. I needed to understand what my physical allergy foods were. What were those ingredients? For me, sugar, high fat, flour, volume. Volume was a big one I had to wrap my brain around. I may not start binging in sugar, but the volume triggers for me that phenomenon of craving. I am an unabashed weigh-in measurer and have been for over 36 years now. I need to know when my meal starts and stops. I need to know that there's no ingredients in it that are going to trigger my phenomenon of craving. And that stops the obsession for me. Some people don't need that, but that's my path, and that's what I need. As an anorexic and a bulimic, I need to have a very firm line in the sand of what is my abstinence, right? Flexibility within boundaries. That's exactly what my food plan is. And I needed to figure out with my sponsor and a nutritionist, because I didn't write my own food plan. We don't do that in OA. We take it to a dietitian, nutritionist, or doctor, or we use one of the OA pamphlets, Dignity of Choice, to get ourselves started. And then I began the process, since I was clear-minded, right, enough to begin the process of working these steps. And that is the process. Began surrender number three, which was a surrender to old beliefs. And it talks about that on page 58. And how it works. You know, we turn, let me just actually go to it instead of butchering it from memory. One of my favorite quotes, it said here, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. And I went through the process of going through these steps with complete abandon. And what it started to do for me was unlock of what was truly going on inside of me, the ism inside of me. You see, through the process of steps 4 through 9, I began to realize that food was only the symptom and the problem was me. What was going on inside of me? What constantly triggered my mental obsession where food came calling, where I constantly sought the restless, when I was constantly restless, irritable, and discontent, and I sought the ease and comfort that it talks about in the Doc Op of the food, right? I mean, I don't know about you all, but did you walk around when you were a kid like I did and feel like everyone else had the instruction manual to life and I didn't get it? So I kind of like made up my own. And what that did for me, and you know, what can I say? I did the best I could, but I realized through my inventory that I was a selfish, self-absorbed, obsessive, compulsive, control freak based on a lot of control, self-centered fear. And I had all these wild ideas about how I thought life was supposed to go, how life was supposed to be. There's a great quote in Bill's story on page 2. It says, out of the alloy of drink and speculation, I was a form, a weapon that would turn around like a boomerang and shred me to ribbons. And that's what my way of living and my ideas of life were doing to me, was shredding me to ribbons and left me in such a dis-ease of living in my own skin that food called to me left and right. Let me give you an idea of some of these ideas, okay? Life is fair, right? Okay, my value is defined by what I achieve. You know, I never felt good enough. I always felt that I was not enough. I'm a human doing, not a human being. I mean, look, I'm a foreign service brat. I grew up overseas, you know, and my family, I mean, I don't blame my family anymore. Thank God for the program for that. Nobody, you know, threw me down, tied me up, and put food down my throat. But I do remember my mother pointing a finger at me and saying to me, I'm 7 years old, you represent the United States of America, act like it. Okay, what? Right? Again, we all have our dysfunctions that we come from. Another idea from my family was never let them see you sweat. Keep those secrets underneath the vest, right? You represent a picture, you act like it, don't let anyone ever see that. And again, the whole idea of willpower. My dad, double doctorate, super achiever, knowledge and intellect, that was the god of our house, right? There's a saying in AA, I'm also in the Father program, that says, we come for our drinking and we stay for our thinking. And what I began to realize that these ideas, these way of living my life were the springboards for all of my character defects and much fear. There's no wonder I sought ease and comfort in food, drugs, alcohol, anything I could get my hands on. And what I started to understand through this wonderful program is that there was a different instruction manual. There was a different design for living that worked. And I got onto the business of learning how and practicing new ways of living and thinking. And I won't say that it was easy, but in that process, I began to understand that there was another aspect to my agnosticism that I had been using that didn't even occur to me until I began working these steps. It wasn't that I only didn't want to have the God of my childhood. It was that I wanted to play God myself. On page 62, it talks about we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And it certainly wasn't working for me. I mean, talk about another eye-opener for me in recovery was that agnosticism. There's a great joke that goes around the rooms where the agnostic is walking around is climbing a mountain, and he's by an edge of a cliff, and he falls over the cliff, and he's about to fall to his death, and he grabs a branch that stops his fall. But he looks at the branch and he says, he realizes that the branch is going to come out and he's going to fall to his death. So the agnostic looks up to the sky and he says, okay, God, if you're really there and you really love me, save me from this death, right? So the sky's open and God says, I love you, my child. You know, I love you, my child. Let go of the branch. And the guy, the agnostic, says, is there anyone else up there? Right? That was me. right? God didn't give me what I wanted, right? So therefore, to heck with you. But what happened through the process of working these steps, I mean, I truly believe the promises are written after the ninth step, before we are, quote, halfway through. Because I started to see through practicing this program in my daily life and through making amends, something doing for me what I could not do for myself. One, I was abstinent. Two, making amends. I mean, there were amends when I say about treating this program buffet style earlier. I'm not joking. I said that there were amends like when hell freezes over. Yes, I may have hurt some of you people, right? But you eviscerated me. I will never make amends. But sure enough, the steps are there. Consequently, you know, you go in and what do you call it? They go the way they're supposed to go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? We don't start out with 9. And by the time I got to step 9, I was ready to make some of those amends. I'll give you a couple examples. One was to my brother. And let me tell you, again, we don't work this program perfectly. And I remember, you know, I'm in the middle of this process and I decide, okay, me, myself, and I decide that I'm going to make a financial amend without talking to my sponsor, without doing anything but making amends. You know, I wanted to make these financial amends. And one of them was to the owner of a gas station where I worked the evening shift. And I would steal money from the cash register and I would go to the candy machines and I would spend dollar after dollar eating the candy out of the candy machines. And then I would close the registers and I would go in the bathroom and spend hours puking, pretending that we were closed. I mean, it was a nightmare of just relapse. It was awful. And I needed and wanted to make this amend. So I decided, look, no problem. I don't need to tell anybody. I'm going to just give the money anonymously so I can sort of clear myself, which of course is not why we do these amends, right? So anonymously, right? So I decide, me, myself, and I, to write a check. Yes, a check to send it to the gas station owner anonymously. So as I am walking to the mailbox and I'm about to mail this check anonymously, I hear this voice. And listen, I'm a on the ground kind of girl. I don't hear a lot from God, but I truly believe there are moments in my life where God absolutely spoke to me. And I got the thought in my mind that said, you know, maybe you should talk to your sponsor before doing this. I mean, I hadn't even realized at that point that this was not going to be anonymous, but I decided not to mail it at that time. And then I realized what I was doing. Now, thank God I didn't, because this guy was known for prosecuting and putting people in jail. And I would have been of no service to the fellow compulsive overeater by doing that. So I did make those amends later, and I was not thrown in jail. It was done the right way, and I had a beautiful conversation with a man that had depth that I had never even imagined. It was a beautiful thing. It was about a year later when I did it, and I've never forgotten it. I did it with such fear and trepidation, and yet I was willing to go to any lengths, and I had an incredible conversation with this man, and I made appropriate amends. The other amends was to my brother. My brother beat me. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. It wasn't just fun and kicks and grids with kids. My brother enjoyed hitting me. Well, I won't say he enjoyed. It was just what happened. And I thought I would never, ever make amends to him. And my first amends to him went very, very wrong. Some amends were incredible and some amends did not go so well. A lot of it had to do with my taking instructions from my sponsor. And I went at him with, you did all this to me, but I forgive you kind of thing. My brother didn't talk to me for probably a year after that. Again, back to practice, back to listening to instructions. And I later went back to my brother and I made the amends appropriately. And we have a good relationship, my brother and I now. Again, seeing God, seeing something out there doing for me what I could never do for myself, not doing it perfectly. Another instruction, let me tell you this one, was to not be, I mean, I'm 22 at this point, working through this program, and one of the things was recommended to me was to not be in a relationship for a year. I could do that. I was single. I was working. It was a commitment to not have any other relationship to anything except my program for a year. So I said, kicking and screaming, okay, I won't do that, right? But I will tell you, at day 365, I was in bed with someone, okay? There is no perfect way to work this program. We all need to be willing to suit up and show up and trust this design for living that works, right? If there was any way to do this program wrong, I got to tell you, I think I probably did. Yet here I am. But by now, I know it is the grace of God, the grace and mercy of God. So all of these things are happening to me, and I'm abstinent. All these things that I'm doing, I'm abstinent. I'm starting to get a sense of myself and how I work, living in 10, 11, and 12. What's making me tick? Being of service to my fellow man and the fellow compulsive overeater. I started to have a purpose in my life. I started to like myself. That to me was absolutely miraculous and such a buoy to my faith. I mean, this disease destroys us physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I've broken the knuckles in my hands twice, looking at myself in the mirror and punching the mirror because I hated myself that much. I began to see a place and a purpose in this world for myself. I never imagined that was possible. So then began my next surrender, which was, how could I not, through these experiences, start to surrender to a power greater than myself, to start to have an actual belief in God? Yes, I started to begin to call my higher power God. Not the God of my childhood necessarily, but a God, something out there. Again, my process. But I began to call that higher power God. And you know, it's interesting how these surrenders, they build on themselves, because I couldn't go straight to God, right? But by surrendering to powerlessness over this disease, I could then surrender to action and willingness. And by surrendering to willingness, I could then surrender the old beliefs and start to understand why I needed a higher power, why I needed a power greater than myself. The big book talks about this. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power in which we could live. I wanted to be sober-minded. I didn't want to just be free of the compulsive eating and the compulsion to eat. I wanted to live a sober-minded person. I wanted to continue to feel like I had a purpose in my life. I wanted to be okay with me. So as I began to surrender these old beliefs, I started to believe that there was a God. And that opened up for me an incredible journey in this faith walk for me. I went back to church. I had, you know, talk about this phenomenon of craving. I had a phenomenon of craving for more. I wanted a relationship with this higher power. I wanted to know God. I wanted to know what God's will for me was, right? And, you know, I love our fellow people in program, and it's awesome because we can like plagiarize each other all we want, and it doesn't matter. And one of our beloved members in this program has all of these podcasts, and I was listening to one, and it says, you know, sometimes we struggle with what we think God's will is for our lives. And he goes, you know, I dare you to sit down and think about what you think God's will is for you. Because I'll tell you what I know 100% God's will is for me. This is him speaking. And this is what he said. And I wrote it down. I believe God's will for me is abstinence, acceptance, courage, enthusiasm, equality, faith, fellowship, flexibility, forgiveness, gratitude, honesty, humility, integrity, kindness, love, open-mindedness, patience, perseverance, accountability, positivity, responsibility, service, spiritual awareness, surrender, tolerance, trust, usefulness, willingness, right? Those are like, I don't know, 25 or 30 ideas right there that I'm pretty sure for me is God's will for me. And then the most important quote here was, I've quit trying to prove and define the unprovable and the undefinable. I had to stop questioning why. I don't have answers, and I can't let my faith be blocked by not understanding and knowing why there is suffering in the world, why things go the way they go. I don't understand. I don't know. But I can tell you, for me, that journey is not over. And I don't need to question, but I have that faith now. I am no longer agnostic. I have a faith in God. I have it through experience, and I have it through this program. But as I said, the journey is not over, and it continues to be a journey day to day. And my next surrender is really what I like to call the surrender of control, or as I wanted to name this special edition, I was laughing with Leah because I wanted to call it serial surrender. And we were laughing because we're like, out of context, people are going to be like, what, you know, surrender to Captain Crunch or surrender to Raisin Bran or Fruit Loops, right? No, not that kind of cereal. We're talking about repeated over and over again of surrender of self. You know, in the morning, I get up every morning because the problem is still me, folks, right? The problem is still me and my thinking. I'm recovered, but I am not cured. So when I get out of my bed in the morning, I hit my knees and I say, God, relieve me of the bondage of self. It's an everyday thing. And sometimes those prayers are a little longer, where I ask to be relieved of the bondage of myself. I pray to not be angry. I pray to God guide my thoughts and my thinking. But sometimes it's just rolling over, getting on my knees, short and sweet. God, relieve me of the bondage of self. And I will tell you, in this journey over the past decades that I've been blessed to be in this program, I am so glad that surrender has happened, because life started happening for me. Just because we get abstinent or we get in this program or we get recovered doesn't mean it's like rainbows and unicorns and, you know, was it tripping through the tulips, right? Things started happening to me. I'll give you some examples. Okay. My sister was diagnosed with MS. My brother, who was recovered for 5 years, relapsed for another 20, where my parents practically bankrupted themselves, enabling his disease. I was laid off 3 times in my working career for no reason other than it was the field that I was in. Businesses got bankrupt, businesses got bought out, and I got laid off left and right. I had a back injury that I thought for weeks I was laid out flat on my back. Those of you who are familiar with sciatic issues and lower back issues understand there is an excruciating pain that comes with that, that unless you've experienced, you know what I'm talking about, where I wound up in surgery 6 weeks later. There are so many things that happened in my life. You know, I'm about to get married, okay? Remember that whole thing about no dating for a year, right? Well, I was off like gangbusters a year later, and I think I was more in love with the idea of being married than actually being in love with the person that I was marrying. Funny now, but not so funny then. And I remember coming home one day, and this is where we're weeks away from the wedding. Weeks, okay. I think it was like five or six weeks. Had the wedding dress, bought the wedding dress, the venues paid for, all of that had happened. And I come home to my fiance, who was beating my dog. And needless to say, at that point, I finally was willing to listen to what so many in the fellowships had been telling me about what was going on with this relationship. No, they weren't marriage counselors, but they were addressing Amy, what are your motives? They were constantly at me, and finally, I saw the light. Thank God, right? I saw the light. And 6 months later, well, let me just say, I put my dog in the car, I grabbed whatever I could, and I moved back home to Maryland, and I finally surrendered again to my control and my way of wanting to write the script for my life. And 6 months later, I met my husband, who I'm now married to with 2 children, and we've been married for 27 years. I mean, geez, I thought I could get through this part without crying, but I don't think so. And you know what's so funny is that, or weird, is that you would think that you would say my faith walk is because I'm going to recount all of my many blessings, right? But for me, it really, there are many, many blessings. But for me, it's also what God did for me, what I could not do for myself in the hard times, right? When, what's that, the footprints prayer where the guy says, you know, I'm walking in the sand, I see two footprints, right? I know, God, you walked beside me all the way, but during the tough times, I only saw one set of footprints. So like, what happened, dude? And God says, well, that's when I was carrying you. And I think, oh my gosh, this is where God carried me. I mean, look, when you have your first child, and your first child, okay, deep breath, Amy, here. Your first child is 3.5 weeks old. And your doctor says, you know, your child is dehydrated. She started puking. And he says, take your daughter to the hospital. And I'm thinking I'm taking my daughter to the hospital for a little dehydration. And the doctor walks in to the room a couple hours later after some diagnostics and says, Amy, there's three ways this is going to go. One, we're going to open your daughter up, her stomach, and we're going to rearrange her intestines because they're not the way they're supposed to be. And she's going to be okay. Second, we're going to have to remove probably 3/4 of her intestines. She's going to have a colostomy bag for the rest of her life. Or worst case, we open her up and there's nothing we can do. Say what? Right? At that point, thank God I had the faith that I did, because I will tell you that the higher power from before, the fellowship, even the 12 steps, that would not have been sufficient. That would not have carried me, okay? It was that faith that said, God, you got this, because I do not. And oh, let me add to the fact, God continuing to do what I could not do for myself, was that there was only one doctor for this hospital that had the ability to work on a 3.5 week old child, infant, right? And he just happened to be on call at that hospital and was able to do the surgery, because we were talking hours here between life and death. And here is the man to do the surgery. Here is the doctor, right? This to me is God doing for me what I could not do for myself. And what about the things that didn't go the way they were supposed to go, right? The way I wanted them to go. Again, my sister has MS. That doesn't change. I have back issues and I will have them for the rest of my life. I have issues, health issues that have not been resolved for years, and I'm still asking for God to help me and give me a diagnosis and a resolution on those. I don't have them yet, but I have to trust that because I have surrendered to God, I have also surrendered to God's love for me, regardless of the outcome or the circumstances. Those are spiritual disciplines that I practice every day. I have to. I can't go down the black hole of why. And I can't go down the black hole of I want it my way. And I can't go down the hole of understanding that I know how the world's going to work. That's not my job anymore. That is God's. If I want to be sane, sober today, I surrender every day to God. You know, this is not getting to know myself better so I can feel good anonymous, right? To me, this is get to know myself better so that I can stop what's blocking me to God's will, so I can be of service to my fellow man. In my humble opinion, the pinnacle of recovery is trying to be a humble servant in this program. That's my job today. And again, what is it like today? I remember someone asking me, you know, what's changed? You've got 36 years, Amy. What has changed for you? And yes, I have had the personality change. I have, by the grace of God, these 12 steps, this program, these tools, these traditions. I have had a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. But what has changed? Well, I can answer, honestly, everything and nothing. Because I'm recovered and I'm not cured. But my disciplines, the way I work my program on a daily basis, those things have not changed. For me, it's like breathing. You know, my program and how I work it is my anchor in my day. It's my anchor in the whirling dervish that is life. But then again, much has changed. And plagiarizing, again, another podcast. This one guy said this, and I've never forgotten it, because this is, thank God, my life. Not perfectly, but he says, I'm recovered, I'm not cured. So I may always have that first thought, which is usually when I'm upset, the first thought is the thought of an addict, right? Some crazy, some emotional thought. But it is my second thought that must be the guide to my first response. I'll give you some examples of how that works for me today. For example, my brother. I have other siblings. I'm the youngest of four. And my mother is now 98, will be 99 in July. And there are, and she has, some financial struggles. And one of the reasons she has those financial struggles is she continually gave money to my brother for his gambling addiction and was enabled. I mean, that's just the way it went. And there's often times when my sister will go on a tirade about the fact that the reason why we're struggling with my mother's care right now is because we don't have the money that we should have had. And sometimes when she starts this, my first thought is to jump on the bandwagon. That's some bitch. What, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's the first thought. And then I'm given the grace, should I choose, to have a pause and say, wait a minute, Amy. You know, I'm throwing stones and glass houses here. How am I to judge one addict to another? I understand powerlessness. I understand now codependency and the powerlessness over that. Who am I to judge? And then my first response after that is to either change the subject, walk away, or just say, hey, I can't throw stones in glass houses. I mean, that is miraculous to me that my thinking is along those planes. Not always, but miraculously more so every day. I can also tell you prayer. I mean, active prayer life. That's changed, I can tell you that. I mean, some of my prayers are just so, I find the relationship that I have with God so amazing. In the sense that I have this like relationship. Sometimes I pause and I say, God, because this whole control thing still rears its ugly head. God, please help me let go of managing, directing, imposing expectations, and planning results for everyone and everything. Trust me, I have adult children. That prayer is absolutely necessary. God, guide my thoughts and my words and my actions. God, how do I let my adult children make mistakes? And let them make mistakes without jumping in there and wanting to fix it, right? Newsflash, folks. I don't have to be an active compulsive overeater to be insane, unhappy, and miserable. It is a program of changing how we think and what we believe. And by the grace of God, I can wrap up by seeing by through serial surrender on a daily basis, I have found peace. I have found joy. I have found contentment. I have found that fourth dimension I have never dreamt possible. I mean, I thought in my wildest dreams, the best part of Overeaters Anonymous would have been, I don't have the food calling to me anymore. But it is so much more that has been given to me, a relationship with God, a way to have a new instruction manual to life. So to the newcomer, to the agnostic, to the one coming back from relapse, let me repeat page 17. We have a common solution upon which we can absolutely agree and join in brotherly and harmonious action. You know, we're not all first timers, right? Some of us are an educational variety, right? Like me. And I'll just sum up with a story about Bill D and the man, I guess some of you all know, he's AA number 3. And I've gone back to these stories now and I'm going through them again. And I just love reading them. And Bill D is the man on the bed, the famous man on the bed where Bill and Bob are talking to him. And he gets up out of his bed and he walks out of the hospital, a free man, never to drink again. So he was the first in their recovery, their reaching out and getting someone to get on board, right, for Bill and Bob. But there's also another man. There's another man, Eddie R. And on July 4th, 1935, Bill D does walk out of the hospital, never to drink again. And they go out and they have a picnic and they celebrate with all their wives, Bill. And there was a man there, Eddie R. And Eddie R. did not get it right away. As a matter of fact, Eddie R., in his stories, he talks about how long it took him to get it. And he says that there are two firsts in AA, the one who got it and the one right away and the one who didn't get it right away. But don't walk out 5 minutes before the miracle, right? I didn't get it right away. I didn't even understand the God thing right away. It was my journey. There is a journey here. This is a program that works. There is room for all of us in this program. I'm not special. I'm not anything just because I have the time that I do. It's a one day at a time program. Come join us. Join us on the broad highway. Join the we. And with that, I will pass. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And with that, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Amy, for such a powerful, inspiring, rich, and profound presentation this morning. Another gem for the archives of A Vision for You. Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us today. Amy's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so please stay tuned for that. We will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question, questions only, to Amy by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name, please.
What is Amy's initial and where is she from?
Amy G., Maryland.
Thank you.
Mary in Oregon.
Yes, Mary Lee R. Who else?
Maureen H.
Maureen H.
Christina J.
Gotcha, Christina.
Matt J.F.
Matt J.F. Good morning.
Leia S.
Melissa. Gotcha, Leia. Melissa. Anyone else want to get in this group?
Marion H. from Florida.
Marion H. Okay, thus far I have Mary Lee R., Maureen H., Christina J., Matt J.F., Leah S., Melissa C., and Marion H. Let's get started. Questions only. Mary Lee R.
Good morning, beautiful people. This is Mary Lee R. in Eugene, Oregon. Thank you, Amy. Could you give me an example of your dialogue and actions concerning pain, your back pain? Thanks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thanks, Mary Pat, for that question. Boy, that was a doozy. And I will tell you, again, the fellowship, God with skin on. There were times when I could not pray for myself, and I reached out to this fellowship and I said, please pray for me. Or I would call and I would, there were people that said, you can call me in the middle of the night. You can call me anytime. And I'm telling you, in the darkness of night, when you're laying in your bed in pain, wondering if you will ever walk again, those calls were invaluable. Because when I would get off the phone with them, I would then have calmed my emotions enough to say, God, please help me. I don't have an answer. I do want to be healed. Please relieve me of this pain. And it was very, very difficult. I struggled. I can't tell you. I am not one of those woo spiritual types of person that all of a sudden I felt like, okay, you know, I heard God say, okay, I'm going to relieve your pain or whatever. No, I didn't get any of that. It was a process of struggling. It was a process of trying to survive through it and realizing that I was not alone. You know, sometimes I felt better just by reaching out and talking. I think better on the paper. I would write letters to God. God, 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 God. That would be my verbiage. And sometimes it was straight prayer. I couldn't get on my knees, right? I couldn't move because it was so painful. So I tried any number and all things that I could. I humbly asked for help. That's one thing that I learned in this program. If something's not working, ask for help, ask for help, ask for help, ask for help. And I had a very, very strong prayer life. And sometimes it was just, God help me, God help me, God help me. It was a mantra over and over and over again. Tough. It was tough, I have to say, but God carried me. And I still have that pain today. So I still deal with it in a different way, but I still pray.
Thanks, Mary Lee R. Maureen H., your turn.
Yes, this is Maureen H., compulsive reader from South Carolina. The story you were talking about, the fellow that didn't get it right away, what is the name of his story, and is it in edition 3 or 4? And what was his name again? I don't.
I am not a big book expert. I was reading AA number 3, and I was on the internet researching, and they came up with the quote from Eddie. He has various. I'm not sure if one of his stories are in there. Maybe you should ask Carlin. Maybe he would know. But it is Eddie R. I don't have any more information than that. I'm sorry, not an expert.
Okay. Thanks.
Mhm.
Thank you, Maureen. Christina J., your turn.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, Amy. Great talk. Something has recently happened to me, and I have found a happiness I've never had. I'm just about 3 months abstinent, and the longest I had was 3 years. But to get to the point, I had a pressure cooker of emotions built up over a period of about 3 weeks. I couldn't drop it. It's been following me my whole life. I did a two-way prayer letter to God, and everything I saw and my fear and my lifetime baggage was lifted. And I feel like I've had a spiritual awakening as opposed to a spiritual experience, I think, is the quick thing. Did you have a moment like that, or have you had several? And just wondering, you know, I know I have to hang on to this by working the program, but things have definitely changed inside of me. I feel free, and it's a miracle. So I'd love your comments on this.
Well, in my humble opinion, when we have experiences like that, grab it and go, girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, go with it and ride it. Ride that wave, right? Yes, work has to be done after that, but those kinds of gifts are tremendous. I mean, I haven't had a lot of those kinds of experiences and those struggles. When they are lifted like that, I just praise God and thank God for when they happen. And I use that to build on my faith and build in working my program. I mean, the big book says God either is or isn't. What is our choice to be? God is either everything or isn't or nothing, it says. And you know, with those kinds of experience, those are the building blocks that allow me, especially in the tough times, to understand, regardless of the outcome of the circumstances, that I am loved by my God, right? And that those experiences help me build and continue to reinforce the fact that I am not alone in this world. And this world may be crazy, but I have a God that loves me and will get me through anything. You know, I even have a God that I can get angry at, but that doesn't serve me any purpose, right? God's big enough. Don't limit your God, right? Don't make your God too small. Make your God big, 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 right? And bigger than this world. But being angry doesn't serve me any purpose but keep me in a victim mentality, right? So I would use those experiences to continue to build on my faith and understand, because there will be a tough time where you want something relieved, at least it's been my experience, and it isn't relieved right away. What do we do then, right? We have to act as if, and we have to use our spiritual distance to say God is still there, God still loves us, and God will still get us through, and that I will be okay. That's a spiritual discipline when things aren't relieved right away. But when they are, man, grab it and go. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Christina J. Before we continue, I'll let everybody know, share ID for this presentation, 21,509. That's 21,509 for today's presentation. Let's continue with questions for Amy with Matt JF. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Amy, for that talk. I'm only 5 years in. But one of the things I found is that slowing down is really a spiritual practice for me, and saying less. And I was just curious if you've had any similar experiences, or if you have and they swung back the other way.
Oh, well, thanks for that question. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention is my spiritual practice is, you know, meditation. And I'm not a sit still kind of girl. And that discipline has been long and hard in the making. And I'm finding, someone told me this the other day, and I loved it, is that my meditation is not so much about listening as is to stop resisting. And that I'm going to be meditating on that, because being able to be still and to hear, as opposed to continuing to tell God what I want, is very, very important in my life. And the being quiet and saying less. I mean, one of my spiritual disciplines, I couldn't agree with you more. One of my spiritual disciplines is actually to keep my mouth shut at certain times, because I can't hear myself think when I am full of emotions, right? And I can't hear somebody else when they're talking to me full of emotions. I can't hear them through their emotions. When it is an emotionally type of charged situation with my husband, with my children, I can't think straight. And one of the best disciplines I can have is not only just pause, but to actually say nothing, is to keep my mouth shut. And if I say anything, it's to say, I need to circle back. I need to take a break. I need to walk away. I can't answer that right now, because I know that I won't say something that will help the situation. And that's what, to me, not only being restored to sanity in the food, but being restored to sanity in my living. That's where I have that moment and a choice about whether or not I'm going to act on that first thought, or whether I'm going to pause, think, and respond in a recovered way. I hope that answers your question. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Matt. JF. Leah S., you're up.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Leah, and thank you so much, Amy, for giving such explicit insight into your challenges. They're also my challenges. So I think you answered the question, but I still want to hear what happened when you finally got to the truth and understood that certain issues are not your problem per se. And how did you get out of the food? Because for me, I got to the realization that I understand everything they're telling me, but just one truffle or one what's it called, and you know, that craving and that mindset that I had. How do you get out of it? Well, basically, maybe you can give an example. Thank you.
Well, with the food and finally surrendering, I think that's what you're asking. It was really the pain of discipline or pain of regret. I mean, I could keep trying to do what I thought I could do, and it wasn't working. So I had to finally surrender to another way. And I had to be willing to go through the discomfort of basically withdrawal from those allergic substances. And boy, do the tools of the program help when that happens, because I didn't all of a sudden, boom, get recovered in my thinking. I had to be willing to take instruction, and I had to be willing to do what I was asked to do, so that I wouldn't put myself in a position where I'm five bites into a binge wondering how the hell did I get here. Right. So that meant being active in whatever my sponsor and this program was asking me to do. Again, I can be stark raving abstinent without these steps, but I certainly need the tools to walk up the steps. And I found the tools to be incredibly, incredibly helpful, especially in early recovery, because I said I'm powerless, but I knew my thinking would get in the way. And I had to constantly be around people that would remind me and talk program to me until I could talk program to myself, till I was recovered enough to talk program to myself and be able to work this program without feeling that craving all the time, or listen to my crazy thinking. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Leah F. Melissa C., your turn.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I'm Alyssa C. Recovered in New York, and thank you, Leah, so much for your service. And Amy, whoa. I got so much from your share this morning, and specifically when you were talking about the situation with your mom and your sibling and your brother that, you know, possibly cause some financial difficulties for you. I am in that exact situation, and so my question is, like, I heard you say, like, when one sibling brings it up, you either, you know, remove yourself or you, and that's been my hope, my desire, but I often fall. And I'm wondering, have you had the experience where you wind up participating in the negative chatter, and then what do you do afterwards? Are you making the amend? How are you? Yeah, I'm curious to hear your process. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, thank you for that question. Look, we don't rise above being human, right? and we haven't cornered the market on, you know, imperfection. And, you know, this process of this recovery is like practice, make a mistake, learn from it, practice again. I mean, repetition is the father of learning. And I'm constantly having this issue come up. And one, it's a spiritual discipline to say I'm not going there. But when I do fall, when I do get into that thinking, a couple of things happen. I either go back to my sister and I make amends saying, look, I cannot continue to do this. I cannot judge my brother for something that I am based on my past, right? I'm not going to do that anymore. It still comes up, you know what I mean? Like, but I go back and I say, I'm going to try not to do this in the future. I can't stop you. And I understand that if you need to talk about it, that's fine. But maybe I'm not the person you need to talk to about it. Or I'm just going to tell you that I'm not going to join in the conversation with you. This is not somewhere I want to go. And I have to be careful with that because I don't want her to feel judged. She has her own path. She has her own process. I'm not there to fix, change, or cure her, right? I can't fix her anger or her resentment or any of my siblings of that. I can't change them. I can't fix my mother of her codependency. I can't do that either. All I can do is work on my side of the street. So when it does happen, I try not to beat myself up. And I try to say, oh, Amy, there you go again. And I try to backtrack by changing my behavior the next time. Sometimes I need to make amends because I really go down the wrong way. Other times I don't. And it's getting better. I will tell you that it is getting better. I just choose not to go there mentally. I have a wall now. I just have a wall. And I rarely falter from that because I've made that mistake so many times, frankly. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Melissa C. Next, we have Marion H. with a question. Marion H, star one, unmute. All right.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes.
It's Marion.
Yes, Marion, go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, thank you so much, Amy and Leah. Thank you so very much. I just need to say I'm very nervous. Just asking a question, and I'm in the rooms a very, very long time. I'm a compulsive eater and a food addict. I'm a chronic relapser, and I have been in the rooms for a very long time. I never left, but I keep going in and out of relapse, had lots of sponsors, and what do I need to do this time, because it's my last chance to life. So please, whatever you have to tell me.
Sure. I can, you know, thank you. Thank you for being willing. I understand what it is to be nervous on the line. Trust me. but I'm so glad that you asked the question. You know, that may be a question between you and your higher power. But I can tell you for the first 5 years, my experience in and out of relapse and my experience was what my blocks were, and that was where my chronic relapse those 5 years was coming from. I'm so glad you're still here. I'm so glad you're coming back. And I think for me, one, I never left. And two is just, I think I had to come to terms with the fact that I kept reaching for the food because food was still doing something for me. Because of my agnosticism, because of my willingness to not work the program all the way. I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm just saying for me, my experience was, is I really had to get down to the basics of checking all the boxes of abstinence and the step work and the things that I needed to do in order to stay abstinent. And I think that was really the only thing, because I started to understand that if I didn't check those boxes, that somehow my thinking would creep in and tell me that it would be okay to take that bite. And the process of the inventory and living in steps 10, 11, and 12. I mean, just because we finished step 12 doesn't mean that there isn't continued active step work on looking at my thinking and addressing the feelings that are not facts, that are not telling me the truth, understanding what it is to live in discomfort, growing in my relationship with my higher power. And I can't stress enough service, service, service. I don't care if it's making coffee at a meeting. I don't care if it's calling a newcomer if you're not at a point where you can sponsor. There's plenty of other ways to get out of myself via service. Again, nothing ensures immunity from drinking or eating, as it talks about in Working with Others, than working with others. So I hope that helps. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Marianne H., for your question. We do have time for more questions. If you'd like to pose a question to Amy, please press star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Maria B.
Maria
Kathy
B.
Kathy G.
Kathy G.
Dana P.
Susan
gotcha,
C.
Dana. Susan C. Good morning.
Madeline B.
Madeline B. Okay. We've got Maria B., Kathy G., Dana P., Susan C., and Madeline B. Let's get started with Maria, please.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, Amy. This is Nadia B. And I have a quick question for you, Amy. Would you talk a bit about details on how you guide your proteges or sponsees through abstinence, or really finding out what entire abstinence is for them? Thank you.
Okay, sure. So thank you for the question. So basically, I'm a very, as I said, upfront, check the boxes kind of girl. I mean, everyone has their way of sponsoring. And of course, we go through the big book and we go through the steps. But I lay a lot of things out up front. And if I am going to be working with someone, yes, abstinence isn't everything, of course, but it is the prerequisite. The big book makes that in the doc op very clear, you know, entire abstinence. So what is that? I mean, we need to figure out what that is. If someone had told me when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, go get abstinent, I wouldn't even have known what that meant. So it depends on what the person's experience is when they come to me. But if it were someone that, you know, has no experience, what I would say is, this is what and how I sponsor, and this is what I'm going to ask you to do. Your choice, I'm going to tell you, you're going to go out, you're going to think about it, and then you're going to come back and tell me, right? Because this is how I work, and this is how I was sponsored, and I'm just passing it on down here. And I'm going to lay out what it is. We're going to figure out what your trigger foods are, what your red, yellow, and green light foods are, what are the ingredients, what are those allergic substances. We have to address the physical allergy. That is a non-negotiable. We have to address what other things that trigger you so that we can refrain for them so that you can be entirely abstinent, right? That's why I always say sugar, high fat, flour, and volume. We address that as well, whether that is an issue. We go through what those foods are. We then take the food, we then go to a nutritionist. You make sure that the food suits your body, your lifestyle, your age, your bone structure, whatever, so that you have one that is healthy, a nutritionist that allows you to lose, if you need to lose weight, a healthy amount of weight in a healthy way, right? So, and then you weigh once a month. And I mean, that's that. We get rid of the abstinence part very quickly. I then ask that you're going to commit while you're doing your 12 steps with me and going through the big book. You're going to commit your food to me on a daily basis. It's about accountability. I do that because I'm accountable to you and I need to understand what you're eating. I'm not going to sponsor you and say food's your business. Mine is just the big book and the steps. I don't sponsor that way. I need to know you need to be accountable to me. I need to be accountable to you. I'm going to tell you to be on the Vision for You meetings. I'm going to tell you to have a home group. I'm going to tell you we're going to do reading and writing. We're going to do work. We're going to do work. And those are the things I'm going to ask you to do. You can choose to do them or not doing, but this is how I expect to sponsor. If you have questions about your food, we're going to ask them. We're going to go through them. If I don't understand your food plan, I'm going to be in your face about your food plan because I refuse to enable the disease, right? I love you. I hate the disease. So this is the groundwork that we're going to do first, because then once the line is in the sand on the abstinence, we get on to the business. We get on to the business that needs to happen, which is the 12 steps. Hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Nadia, for your question. And Kathy G., your turn.
Thank you, Leah, and thank you so much, Amy, for that powerful presentation. Really appreciated all your insight. My question, I just, out of complete curiosity and a person who prays, I just was curious as to how your daughter did through the surgery.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot to tell you. I forgot. You know what? She's 23 and she's invincible.
Aww.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Sometimes I get rolling and I forget details. And yeah, she made it. Thank God she made it. And she was completely healthy. They were able to rearrange. She had something called a malrotation of the bowel, where in utero, your intestines are supposed to form on the outside of you and then go to your insides or something like that. And they got all twisted in that process and they were choking, literally in knots, choking the life out of her. So it was pretty scary, but God got me through. So thanks for asking. I completely forgot to say that it was okay. Thank you. Thank you.
A cliffhanger it was. Okay. Thank you, Kathy G., for your question. Dana P., your turn.
Good morning. Thanks, Leah. Thanks, Amy, for your lovely rendition and your story on that cliffhanger. I love it. Sorry, I have a frog in my throat. I was also really appreciating, Amy, what you shared about the third and the fourth, Bill Dobson and Eddie R. And what you said is, you know, some of us get it right away and some of us it takes longer. And I'd just like to hear a little bit more about what it is for you, even in abstinence, you know, because you shared so much of your story about the things that keep happening and difficult situations. And I'm kind of more alluding to that emotional sobriety piece. I'd just love to hear a little bit more about what it is that you got, whether it was immediate and or if it's this unfolding process for you. That's my question. Thanks.
Sure. No, it's definitely an unfolding process. I mean, if you had asked me back then in the 80s that I would choose to call my higher power God, I would have bet you a gazillion dollars that that would never happen. So we're definitely on an evolution. I mean, we're evolving here. And that it thing for me, I think look, they say in the program, our recovery is contingent on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. I understand that now, which means I must stay spiritually fit if I want to be sane and sober, much less have the food call, right? And I want that sobriety. I want that sober-mindedness. And the saying in the rooms is that you can only coast downhill. I don't want to be a coaster. My biggest fear in long-term recovery is complacency. I don't want to be complacent in my relationship with God. The it factor for me is constantly growing in that relationship with God. And it seems like the older I get, the more I need God, frankly. And so that it factor is to constantly be growing in my relationship. And that's what this book is about. It says it. This book is about for you to find a power greater than yourself that can solve your problem, not just your problem of eating, but the problem of living life on life's terms in a world that can be really difficult at times. It can be beautiful, it can be awesome, and it can be incredibly, incredibly difficult. And so what do I do? The it is God. It is God. And that's what my it is. I hope that helps.
Thank you for your question. Susan C., your turn.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Leah and Amy, and thanks so much. Such a meaningful, rich share. I wanted to ask, you were talking at one point about health issues, and I wondered if you have access to, in your mind, any fourth column work you may have done on the self-seeking behaviors, the selfish thinking, the dishonest, distorted thoughts, the self-protective fears, and as an optional part two, if you happen to do extended column work on the third column, where you look at its effect on some of your instincts like security, et cetera, when health issues arise. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you for the question. Yes, that's ongoing step work. And those are my spiritual disciplines. You know, I'm asking God to relieve me of the bondage of self. And when it comes to health issues, it's to dictating when and how I'm going to get better, you know, and how the diagnosis, when and how I'm going to get a diagnosis, when and how I'm going to feel better, when and how I'm not going to be sore. And those disciplines, you know, there has been step work done on those, but a lot of them have been in just on surrender. Again, my God is big enough to handle me when I'm angry and frustrated. And I can certainly and have done, you know, work where I say, you know, I'm angry at God. Why? Because God is not relieving me of this health issue. What does this affect? Of course, it affects my self-esteem, myself, all of that, my security. Where am I being selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? I'm being dishonest by thinking I get to play God again, right? Or that I know the cue, or that I know what's right for me, right? I used to think the worst thing in the world would be that I'm a binger, I'm a purger, I'm a bulimic, I'm an anorexic. Well, that was not the worst thing in the world. Turned out that turned out to be the best thing in the world for me, because I still would have been a selfish, self-centered, dishonest, immature child. But this disease brought me to this program, and God brought me to where I am now, where I have had the honor and the privilege and the grace and the mercy, all of those adjectives, to learn how to change my life and how I think and how I believe. So actually, the worst thing in the world was not for me to be a compulsive eater or a drug addict or an alcoholic. It was not the worst thing. So when I'm saying I'm being dishonest, it means, okay, I'm being selfish because I want what I want when I want it now. I mean, look, I'm a feel good junkie. I mean, let's face it, right? This is not Feel Good Anonymous, right? This is Overeaters Anonymous, right? This is not a program that's going to say you're going to feel good. Okay. So I'm self-seeking because when I get into this, I'm into self-pity. I'm into victimhood. So I'm selfish, I'm self-seeking, I'm being dishonest with myself, I'm trying to play God again, I'm trying to write the script, right? So what's the lie I'm believing? I mean, ultimately, that's what that fourth column is. The lie is believing that God doesn't love me, that God isn't going to take care of me, that I'm not okay, even though I'm uncomfortable. what's the lie, right? To me, that's where the step work all comes in. And that's when I work through the columns when it comes to my health issues. I have to believe that I'm going to be okay and that I'm still okay today, okay? I have a roof over my house. I have my abstinence. I have my program. I have service. And frankly, when I can't get out of it, when all of that fails, service, picking up the phone and talking to another suffering compulsive overeater, it works every time. Nothing may change in my life, but when I talk to another fellow sufferer, something happens and I feel better. I get out of myself. That's usually what does the trick, getting out of myself when it comes to those health issues. I just can't go down that black hole of victimhood, and service to another is one of the best ways to do that. So, long answer. Hope that helps.
Thank you, Susan C. We have a question now from Madeline B. Your turn.
Hi, this is Madeline B. Thank you so much for this topic. I am emotional right now. I'm in the early I have been I'm new to the program, and I have worked 2 years in another program, process disorder, and or process addiction. And my biggest concern today is, and I'm hoping you can shed some light on this, I have a 21-year-old daughter who attempted suicide in high school. It didn't tell me about it till 2 years later. And she's just turned 21 and is living on the East Coast. Anyway, she's been, you know, kind of isolating, and when I reach out to her over text, you know, she'll be like, sorry, mama, you know, sorry I haven't been responsive, and that's just it. And, like, I love you, and that's it. And I'm in that emotional unsobriety state. Where,
Madeline? Madeline?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing yourself with us. Can you please form a question in the interest of time?
Yeah, do you have any like recommendations for dealing with the fear and releasing that fear around a child? It's such a hairy business, like the parenting work versus the, like, balancing that. And that's it. Thank you.
You know, first of all, let me say this is hard stuff, and I'm so sorry for what you're going through. It's difficult, and I relate, not in exact ways, but difficulties with children. And one of the things that I had mentioned earlier is about pressing into the program, pressing into God, pressing into the fellows. Particularly when emotions are strong, you know, our emotions tell us, I believe that our emotions sometimes are not telling us the truth, that the way we feel is going to kill us. And they're not really facts. Feelings are not facts. And the reality now is that you have the we, you are in the we of the fellowship. Come into the fellowship and let us embrace you through this and help and continue to do what you're doing. Or I would ask, as if I was your sponsors, to ask for help, is to continue to ask. I can honestly tell you that there is nothing that I have gone through in my life that if I hadn't been humble enough to ask for help, that there hasn't been someone who has gone through this and has been willing to talk me through and tell me what they did. And I'll also say that the best thing is what you're doing for yourself right now is for what we all do for ourselves, is to get recovered and stay recovered. Because I can't do anything to help others if I'm not sane and sober myself. And early in recovery, it's a wild ride. It's like riding a Bronco. You know, feelings are all over the place. It's an emotional roller coaster. You know, my emotions were untested. I laughed when I should have cried. I cried when I should have laughed. I mean, those I mean, everything, the wires were crossed. So that in-depth step work for inventory was so, so important. And then in dealing with others is really taking a look at those fears. There is a fear inventory. Be patient, get a solid foundation of working through your steps, and get to that fear inventory that would allow, that would, you know, I was a control freak because I had so much self-centered fear. So that fear is something that was addressed in my inventory. So hang on, do the work is what I was told to do. So I can only pass it on to you and press in to your higher power, because that is the power source that keeps us connected, and trust that the process will be what the process is, that you will be okay, and that you can, it can be worked through. This situation can be worked through. So keep asking for help and keep doing the work that needs to be done. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Madeline B., for your question. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And of course, thank you so much, Amy. It's truly been a blessing to spend some time with you this morning. And thank you for sharing your profound experience of transformation with all of us on the line this morning. Truly inspirational. Mm-hmm. The share ID for this morning, 21,509. That's 21509. And we're going to close the meeting right now from page 164. It's found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transcend something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.